interview with Carol Quigley. If you listen the rest of this week, it should be an exciting time because this interview has never been played on the radio before, and you're going to have an opportunity to hear it right here on Radio Liberty. One of the things that's very often done if you want to suppress a book is you just don't distribute it. You print the book, you get the copyright on it if you are the publisher, and then you just don't distribute it. Or, better still, if you can get the book, you pay the person for the copyright, and then you don't even print it. And that sometimes happens. And so those of us who are a little wise about the way things are going, many times will not allow a book to be distributed unless we're certain that the publisher is on our side. Because so often those on the other side simply will not allow the books to get out. I've mentioned a book dealing with the AIDS crisis. It's called The Catastrophe Ahead. Actually, it was written by the Hudson Institute, which is a very reliable think tank back in Indianapolis, Indiana. They were trying to tell and warn the American people that the epidemic would literally destroy America. They prognosticated that if we did not begin addressing the epidemic as an infectious disease or find a cure by the year 2002, in the worst-case scenario, we could have 14.2 million people infected. We could lose 42% of our black youth and 25% of our Hispanic youth. Now, at that point, our whole society would begin to crumble. And what happened to the book? Well, it was published by Prager Publisher, which is establishment publishing house. Could have gotten this thing circulated across America. They printed and distributed a few copies. They never made any effort to get it reviewed in the major publications, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Denver Post. They priced it at $39, and it's just a little tiny book. It's about a third as thick as my own book, which is sold at $14.95. Who's going to put out $39? And as a result, almost no copies have been printed and distributed. And it's an interesting study in thought control today to try to get a copy of the book, The Catastrophe Ahead, written by Johnston, published by Prager, the Hudson Institute Report. Just try and get a copy of it, and you'll begin to get some idea of how thought control is used so effectively in America today. Of course, one of the things you can do is you can copyright something that you don't want distributed, and I mentioned Colonel House's papers back at Yale University. I think they were initially purchased by Times Mirror, and since they had purchased and copyrighted Colonel House's diary at Yale University, nobody else could duplicate it. I went there in 1980. I wrote to them in 1985 or 1986, and they still had not come out with the publication. And when they were going to publish it, they were going to publish it on microfiche, and you would have to read it on some sort of a monitor in a library. Now, here is one of the most exciting documents in all history, the diary of Colonel House. It was actually published as the Intimate Papers of Colonel House, published, written by Charles Seymour. I think it was 3 or 4 volumes, and people were willing to read that. The trouble is when Charles Seymour, who was a personal friend of Colonel House's and also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, when he put out the Intimate Papers of Colonel House, published by Houghton and Mifflin, he left out all the really significant things, or many of the significant things, which would have influenced our understanding of Colonel House and the times in which he lived. And, of course, for those of you who don't remember Colonel House, he was the Machiavellian character who picked Woodrow Wilson to be our president and later picked FDR to be our president and dominated American foreign and domestic policy between 1911 and about 1933 when he died. And leaders from all over the world coming to America would always go to visit Colonel House, or as I refer to him in my next book, The Evil Colonel. And so it was that books, sometimes they're printed, they'll be taken off the shelves in the libraries. Every effort is made to keep people from reading the truth. One of the best examples I can give is a book called The Invisible Government, written by Dan Smoot. And Dan Smoot was a commentator, had a nationwide television and radio commentary across America in the early 1960s. It was time that was bought by Dr. Ross of Dr. Ross Dog Food. And, of course, the administration was very anxious to silence him. This was the Kennedy administration. And an order was given, we must silence the right-wing critics of our administration. And so they passed an edict called the Freedom Act, or Freedom of Information, not Freedom of Information Act, but the Fairness Doctrine for radio broadcasts. To understand the Fairness Doctrine, you need to read a book called The Good Guys, the Bad Guys, and the First Amendment, written by Fred Friendly, who was actually a dedicated liberal. But he realized that the Fairness Act as passed by the FCC under the Kennedy administration, was aimed at censorship, and it worked very effectively. And for many years, those people who really told the truth and tried to get information out about what was really going on in America just couldn't get onto radio. Fortunately, we can get onto radio now. We don't have much of a listening audience, but at least we can put information out. But Dan Smoot wrote a book. It was called The Invisible Government. And some evening, while we'll play our interview that we did with him back in 1980, it's fascinating when he talked to me about the book and what he told me about it. Basically, he went from publisher to publisher, and many of them said, oh, Mr. Smoot, you know, we'd love to publish your book. But then when they read the book and they realized who was named in the invisible government, none of them had the courage to publish it. So then he published it himself, had it printed, and he went to the distributors. And all the distributors said, oh, no, we wouldn't want to distribute your book because nobody would want to read it. And so all the major distributors in America refused to carry Dan Smoot's book. Now, these are the major distributors. Well, Dan Smoot then decided to put it out on his own. He did have a nationwide television and radio program. And he told me, he said, I printed and distributed a million copies of that book that no publisher would publish and no distributor would distribute because nobody would buy it. But an interesting study in thought control in America today is to go to your local library and try to get a copy of The Invisible Government. Now, when you go, you won't get Dan Smoot's Invisible Government. You'll get a book on the CIA. Go to your used bookstores and start looking for a copy of Dan Smoot's The Invisible Government. Now, with a million copies out there, that ought to be an all-time bestseller. But you're going to have a hard time ever finding a copy of Dan Smoot's The Invisible Government. Now, I could give you example after example of what we're talking about, but I think we're going to just take a moment's break here, and when we come back, we're going to tell you more about thought control in America, who's doing it, and how it's done. And remember, our telephone numbers are 464-8295. That's 464-8295. And hopefully we'll have time during this hour to take your calls. If not, in the next hour, you're going to hear an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. This is Dr. Stan at KFER, 89.9 FM on your radio dial. And we're going to talk to you a little bit more about the problems that face us today. Remember, our telephone number is 464-8295. And if you'd like to write to us, and we'd love to hear from you, we certainly need your financial help to keep our programs on the air. Our post office box is 13 in Santa Cruz, and that's 95063. And it's important that if you believe in what we're doing and what we're trying to do, that you at least drop us a line and let us know that you're listening and let us know that you support us. And if you'd like copies of any of the tapes or any of the programs that we have or like access to any of the books we've talked about, why, get in touch with us and we'll tell you how to get hold of them. Those of you who are regular supporters of our program will automatically receive a copy of The New World Order by Pat Robertson, one of the best books that I know, to begin to introduce you to America's invisible government. Now, how is thought control carried out in America? And when I first got started, you have to understand this was back in 1962, and I was naive as about anybody in America could be. And the first thing I started to do, I started subscribing to the communist publications. I started reading the Daily World at that time. And I realized that there was a vast communist movement in America, and there were members of the Communist Party here in Santa Cruz and all throughout the country. And I read J. Edgar Hoover's book, The Masters of Deceit, and I became aware of the fact that there was a world communist movement that had already killed in the Soviet Union 60 million people, in China about 80 million people at that time, and since then they've killed millions in Cambodia and millions in Ethiopia, and they've killed millions in Afghanistan. They've killed millions throughout the world. You know, when you talk about millions, it's hard to imagine that each one of those is an individual like you and I that loves life and loves, enjoys life and has a family, and yet each one of those has died a slow, lingering, painful, solitary death. Each one is not a statistic, it's a human being. It's sometimes hard to imagine what has really transpired in our society. And my initial impression was that it was the communists who are working within the media. And I know there are communists working in the media. If you've ever read Whitaker Chambers' book, Witness, Whitaker Chambers was actually a reporter, editorial writer for the Time magazine. He talked about the communist cells within Time magazine in those days. There were communist cells all across our nation. There were some of them in key positions in government. Alger Hiss had been in the same cell with Whitaker Chambers and Nathaniel Ware and John Apt. These were all highly placed people in the government. Lachlan Curie, who worked as a secretary and an administrative assistant to the President of the United States, FDR, was a member of one of the communist spy rings, one of the communist cells. And so, initially, you begin to think it is the communists that are influencing all of the media. And then you begin studying a little further, and you finally realize that there is a world socialist movement of which communism is simply one arm. Now, you speak of communism in the olden days. It used to be referred to as the Third International. Well, what was the Second International? And what was the First International? And what was the Fourth and Fifth International? Well, they were socialist internationals. The first one originating in the 1860s, the second one originating in 1882. The third one was, of course, the Communist International in 1917, when Lenin broke away from the other socialists to establish socialism in the Soviet Union, but a separate type of socialism. And then the Fourth and Fifth Internationals, the Fifth Socialist International, still exist today. And, of course, the communists in China were a break-off of the Third International, and Trotsky, who broke away from Stalin, formed the Socialist Workers' Party, the Trotskyites, the Revolutionary Workers' Party, because Trotsky believed in world revolution, and Stalin believed in revolution in one nation, consolidating power, and then extending to bring socialism to the entire world, by a slow revolutionary process rather than a rapid revolutionary process. And at that point, I suddenly thought, well, I understand what's really going on. There is a world socialist movement, and they're the ones who are controlling the media. And I read books like The Open Conspiracy by H.G. Wells, which openly talked about the socialist efforts to gain control of the media. It was to be an open conspiracy. They were going to get the socialists working in the educational system. They were going to get socialists working in the newspapers and in the radio. They were going to get socialists working in every aspect of our society. But I think it was the book The Open Conspiracy by H.G. Wells. Incidentally, try to get a copy of that one. But if you want to get a copy of it, we can tell you where to get it, because there are people who deal nothing but deal in suppressed books. But one of the things that H.G. Wells said, and when I read it, I just had a terribly uneasy feeling, because what H.G. Wells said in his book, The Open Conspiracy, is, but you will find that there are many bankers who agree with our program to bring socialism to the world. And so it was that I began to realize there had to be some other force in the world. And, of course, eventually I read a book called The Foundations, Their Power and Their Influence. It was the story written by the Council for the Rees Committee, which was assigned by the Congress of the United States to investigate the great foundations in America. And the foreword was written by Congressman Rees himself. And, of course, this was the background behind the investigation of America's great foundations. And in the foreword of the book, Congressman Rees said this: the purpose of our investigation of the great foundations was to find out what part the great foundations played in pushing Marxism in America and trying to destroy the love which every American should feel for his country. Well, that came as quite a revelation. And as I read through the story, I found out how the foundations had financed Marxist professors and the writing of Marxist textbooks, and suddenly realized that the great foundations in America were pushing socialism. Well, then we, of course, read Dan Smoot's book, The Invisible Government, and since then we've read so many books, including the book written by Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, the book entitled Tragedy and Hope in the History of the World in Our Time. Let me tell you who controls the media in America. If you are interested in who there is in the television who belongs to America's invisible government, the invisible government is really coordinated through the Council on Foreign Relations at 5080 68th Street in New York City. Here's a list in 1980 of the television personalities who belong to the Council on Foreign Relations. There was David Brinkley, William Buckley, John Cantler, Marcus Childs, Marvin Kalb, Jim Lehrer, that's of Lehrer McNeil, of course McNeil belongs to, Irving Levine, Bill Moyer, Harry Reasoner, John Scali, Victor Rizal, Daniel Shore, Barbara Walters, and of course since then Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw have all joined. Now, that covers just about all the three major networks, and the reason that you never read about these things is because when you join the Council on Foreign Relations, you must promise that you will never reveal anything that you hear when you join the Council on Foreign Relations. The people who control the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Denver Post, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Time Magazine, News Magazine, not Newsweek Magazine, U.S. News and World Report, the Atlantic Monthly, the Wall Street Journal, the Reader's Digest. You see, somebody's got to lead the conservatives. They've been doing it for years, and they have controlled and manipulated both the right and the left. And that's one of the things that Carol Quigley says in his book, that they have financed the right wing in America, the conservatives. They financed the left wing in America, the liberals. Irving Kristol wrote a book about his conversion to conservatism. And he talked about when he was the editor for one of the major magazines, and I've forgotten whether it was The Nation or The New Republic, but he mentioned how this had actually been funded by the CIA. And you must understand that the CIA funds many publications in America to influence public opinion. Bill Buckley, it is said, in his earlier years came from the CIA, and of course he is the conservative leader, at least this is what we are told. But when I was back at the Council on Foreign Relations headquarters just about a year and a half ago and entered their library, and of course there were all of their publications representing their control of the world, the international affairs, foreign affairs, all of their various publications, and there was a copy of the New Republic for the left and the National Review for the right wing. And of course what you must understand is both the left and the right are manipulated. We have a caller here. Well, let me tell you a little bit more about their degree of control over the media. If you pick up, and you can go to your local library, you can go down and look in the some of the stores that deal with magazines. Get a copy of Foreign Affairs and look at the advertisers. They're all the various university presses. This university press, that university press, Little Brown and Company, Harper's, Simon & Schuster, literally every major publishing house in America is tied into the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, the reason that you never hear about them, of course, is because they control the media in America. Now, you say, how could anything be that all-inclusive? Who owns the Santa Cruz Sentinel? Why, Dow Jones and Company. Who is Dow Jones and Company? Same people who control the Wall Street Journal, the conservative voice of America. But somebody has to lead the conservatives in America. Why not the same people who lead the liberals? And until you understand the Council on Foreign Relations, America's invisible government, you can't understand what's going on. Their members control CBS, NBC, and ABC. Their people control PBS, and certainly I'm sure they're able to influence the rather left-wing cable news network of Ted Turner, although I don't think he's necessarily a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And we've read to you earlier the fact that Bill Clinton's, all of his advisors, or most of his major advisors, come from the Council on Foreign Relations, or the Bilderberger Group, which is affiliated. And that would be Warren Christopher and Secretary of the Treasury Benston, and the new head of the CIA. And we can go right down the list of his major advisors. At least half of them, closer to two-thirds, come from the membership lists of the Council on Foreign Relations, which most of you have never heard of. Well, we have one caller on the line here, and I'm going to take line one. Is this Tony?
Yes, Dr. Dan.
Yeah, how are you?
Oh, good. Very well. I'm trying to understand the involvement of Colonel House in the early days of the CFR.
All right.
And because you've talked about him several times, and I'm really trying to figure out what his involvement was in all of this.
All right. Let me give you a little background. It was in 1917 after the first, the armistice, 1917-1918, the First World War ended. Colonel House was a charismatic individual who actually had almost a hypnotic control of Woodrow Wilson. So when the Versailles Peace Treaty was to be signed, Colonel House went to Europe with a group of men known as the Inquiry, young idealistic men indoctrinated in socialism, at our major Eastern universities. And these were the people who represented the United States drawing up the Versailles Treaty. Who were they? John Foster Dulles, Allen Dulles, John Foster Dulles to become Secretary of State, Allen Dulles, head of the CIA, Christian Herter, Walter Lippmann. I mean, there were about 50 of them. They were known as the Inquiry. And what happened at that time was that the members of the British counterpart, the secret societies created in England, out of the Milner and Cecil Rhodes group, met with the Americans and said, look, the aristocracy of Britain has been killed in this war. You've got to pick up this whole movement towards world government. And at that time, in England, they formed the Royal Institute for International Affairs. They formed similar institutes throughout the world, but in America, they formed the Council on Foreign Relations, and Colonel House was one of the major founders of the Council on Foreign Relations in America. That's where he got his initial basis, and of course, in fact, if you go to New York City today, you'll find that his home was right across from where the Harold Pratt House is, right directly across the street from 58 to 68th Street in New York City. But this is where he got his foundation.
Well, wasn't he a Texas oil man?
Well, no, he was the son of a very wealthy Texas, I don't know whether, I guess maybe his dad did make his money in oil. But Colonel House really never did much of anything except plan on how he was going to create a world socialist system. We're running out of time, but if you'd like to hang on, we can answer your question right after the break, or would you rather hear Lee Harvey Oswald?
I'll take Lee Harvey Oswald.
All right, fine. Well, then we're going to have to take a break here now, and we'll be coming back in just a couple of minutes after the news with one of the most amazing interviews that you've ever heard, an interview with the man who killed the President of the United States. Lee Harvey Oswald. Don't change the dial.
Something wrong. There's a hunger for good news and heroes, but good news is no news, so all of the heroes are gone.